I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of several lore-focused people over at Blizzard Watch. I say several because a lot of people are invested in the story right now. Anyway, I've got both my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, he's the other lore aficionado, official lore aficionado over at Blizzard Watch. That would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Greetings, humans.
Human? Okay.
We're going to be talking about Mechagon, so lots of non-humans.
Yes.
There.
Well, yeah, there is that. and while we're at it here, I'm going to introduce the other source of the chuckle there. That would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
It's going pretty darn well. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right. I will be better once this lingering cough thing goes away, honestly. My voice has just been kind of ragged for like the past couple of weeks, and most of it is due to overwhelming amounts of pollen everywhere.
Yeah, awful. It is definitely that season.
Yeah. So I'm trying to mitigate it as best I can with, like, you know, tea. But yeah, if I get a little gravelly, I apologize in advance, folks. Speaking of, we might as well just kind of jump into what we're going to talk about on the show. Last time we got together... Well, actually, no, before we leap into that, last time we got together, it was episode 99, which makes this episode number 100 of Lore Watch. You guys, we've been doing this for 100 episodes.
We are old hands at this by now.
When did that happen? It feels like we just started this.
Wouldn't that make this as a 2-year mark? Because I'm doing them every other week.
Yeah. Roughly. No. Yeah. Maybe? I don't know.
Do them every other week.
There's 52 weeks
in a year. So if we're doing on 100, we've been doing this for almost 2 years.
Well, more than that, 4 years.
It would be four. Because there's 52 weeks in a year, but we're doing them every other week.
Yeah.
Have we really been doing that? Okay. Wow. Wow. Anyway, regardless.
It does not feel like we've been doing this for 4 years.
No, it doesn't. Like, not even a little bit. Okay. All right. Well, that's... Wow. Yeah, that's right. Because we started... We were talking about, like, Chronicle Book 1 and stuff originally.
Yeah.
And like, the BlizzCon before that happened. Yeah. We have been doing this for a while. Okay, well, the passage of time aside, for those of you that have been listening for all 100 episodes, thank you. And for those of you that are just, you know, tuning in or have only recently caught up with us, hey, welcome. Sit down. We're going to talk about lore. It's going to get a little crazy. Probably a lot of speculation involved. So yeah, I guess here's to 100 episodes, you guys. I didn't expect that the show would go this long, but...
Huzzah!
Yeah, I'm glad it has.
I mean, I fully expected us to be going for eons.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just me.
Okay. All right. Now back to the subject at hand, or rather the subject from 2 weeks ago. We were talking about the 8.2 PTR, and we did slap spoiler warnings on that one. This is going to be another spoiler heavy episode because, quite frankly, we talked about everything but like the two new zones that we're jumping into because there was so much side stuff going on. So today we're going to be talking about Mechagon, and we're also going to be talking about Nazjatar. Obviously, this is going to involve spoilers from the PTR. So if you're avoiding all of that stuff, hi, thank you for stopping by for episode number 100. Now you should probably shut it off and either go play on the PTR or just, you know, come back after it's after the patches come out. We understand. It's fine. This is your official spoiler warning. That's it. Okay, let's jump into this. We get two new zones, and one of them is really, 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 really huge, and that would be Nazjatar. The other one is not quite as huge, but it's still pretty substantial, and that would be Mechagon. The other unique thing about Mechagon is it introduces a new mega dungeon called Operation Mechagon, along the lines of Karazhan from Legion. Have you guys checked into this at all? Have you guys seen what's what as far as Mechagon goes, or the story of Mechagon? Because it's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, I've been looking at it a bit.
Does one of you want to explain what's up?
No, we don't. We'd want to make you do it. No, I'm kidding. I feel really bad, actually. It sounds like you're having trouble with the cough, and I know how that feels.
Yeah.
Okay.
My voice Mechagon.
Yeah, I'll just get into it. Mechagon, the zone, is kind of a lost kingdom of dwarves. And essentially what happened was 400 years ago...
Wait, dwarves?
Gnomes.
Okay.
When 400 or so years ago when the gnomes first kind of like woke up. Because remember, the gnomes that we have in Azeroth, they're in the Eastern Kingdoms. Those gnomes come out of Uldumon, as did the dwarves. Remember, both the gnomes and the dwarves came out of Uldumon. And when they were in there, they were kept in stasis. When they came out, they didn't really know much of what was going on. So they just kind of did their best and started like a kingdom in, bloody heck, I can't think of the name of the starting zone for dwarves.
Khazad-dûm.
Thank you. And Khazad-dûm, they both started their own kingdoms. The gnomes started Nomorgon and the dwarves started the, you know, Ironforge. But apparently, originally, and this is new information to me, I'd never heard this before. Apparently the gnomes had a king at the time, and his name was Mechagon. And that's interesting because it's very similar to a character we met in Northrend named Mechazod, Gearmaster Mechazod. So it's quite possible this Mechagon was similar to Mechazod in that he might have been a former Gearmaster or some other Titan construct who retained some of his mechanicalness.
I was going to say, what kind of interested me about that whole thing right there is that the gnomes, as far as we knew, the gnomes never had like a monarchy type thing. It was always their leader was voted in. Basically, it was kind of like a democratic thing where everybody said, yeah, you've got the best stuff, you're the best tinker, so you're going to go ahead and lead us. And
yeah, and that's basically what happened after this, because when the gnomes come out, apparently Mechagon was like, this isn't right. We're lacking something. We're not supposed to be these fleshy things. And he took his most loyal followers and left. And the ones that stayed behind were the ones who became modern gnomes, the ones who kept staying gadgets on and elected their, you know, high tankers. That whole society comes out of him abandoning them. He took his loyalists and left. And for 400 years, no one's heard from this guy again. There's like a few legends. I can't remember the name of the guy. Overspark. Overspark is the guy who gives you the quest, who's like, you know, he's the one who knows the legends, who's like, yeah, they have these legends of this guy, Mechagon, this king who left to go find this mythical land of technology, and we don't know what happened to him. And that's how, when we get to Mechagon, that's basically, we're looking for this forgotten vault that Mechagon is. And so that's the when we get there, we're going to basically follow up on this legend. There's a place in Kul Tiras I don't know if you know about it. It's in the same zone as Borealis.
Yeah, it's Tirigard Sound. It's rusted vault in Tirigard Sound.
Yeah, that has a beacon that leads to this place. The Mechagon Island, which is apparently some kind of Titan construct or something that that Mechagon led his people to, and using it, he's found a way to effectively re-mechanize them to a degree. Like, he can give them robotic limbs and parts, but he's gone kind of crazy, kind of real crazy, kind of wipe out all organic life crazy. Like, that's the whole bit of the dungeon. The whole point of the dungeon is got some way.
He's kind of replaced so many of the flesh parts with mechanical parts that he doesn't really have a heart or empathy or anything like that anymore. He's like a Cyberman. This is
I mean, I'm wondering if that's a little bit, if there's something more to it than that, because one of the things that was very evident when they started talking about this is that it wasn't just that he randomly decided to do this. He was given a vision that, you know, flesh was weak and must be replaced by the robotic parts and bring them back to their, you know, their original form, and that he was going to be a champion of this plan, right? Like, that was the whole thing. But he received a vision. We don't know where that vision came from. So is it like the other corruption? Right?
I don't think so, because here's the deal, right? The whole reason that they became fleshy in the first place was because of the curse of flesh from the old gods. Mm-hmm. So the old gods wouldn't turn around and say, hey, yeah, you need to make yourselves into metal again.
Would they? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, they're not being converted back. Like, when Deathwing and the weird stone cat people, why can I not remember their name now?
Tolvir.
The Tolvir. When the Tolvir were being converted, they were being converted back through a magical process that was actually reverting them back to an earthen state. It wasn't just being replaced. So they're still squishy inside. They still have, like, brain bits and fleshy bits, and they're sort of being made into cyborgs. They're not actually reversing the curse of flesh, right? They're basically just lopping off pieces of themselves and sticking cybernetic pieces onto them. And at the inside, I mean, at least from what I've read and from the description of it, they still have brains, and it's still their brains inside. It's not a machine brain that's replaced it. So at the end of the day, I mean, I could see this fitting in Old God's plan of an extra crazy sort of minion to go do my bidding, because if you have this thing that's a fleshy, squishy brain that thinks it's impervious to all of this stuff because it has to save the entire world from this curse of flesh by turning everything into robots with its giant death robots, that's just more discord. That's just more chaos. Like, I could see that being
I suppose.
I just honestly don't think we need to drag the old gods into this one. I mean, here's the thing. When you do the Drost stuff in Drostvar, one of the things that they mention is that the Drost had conflict with a small group of beings that resembled gnomes in stature.
True.
And if Mechagon's vault, the vault that you find in Baralis leads one to Mechagon, there's a beacon there. The gnomes may have set up, they may have gotten to Drostvar, been attacked by the Drost, retreated to Tirigard Sound, set up the beacon so that any of their people that were looking for them could find them, and then retreated off to another place. I think that none of that requires the old gods' active involvement. I just think it's stuff happening. I think to a certain degree, we're inclined to look for old gods this expansion because we know they're active. We know they're out there doing stuff. But I think the old god stuff's going to be over in Nas Jatar, and I think this is just one brilliant but dangerous person who's found out
I feel like
something he shouldn't know, and he's going to do this whether or not anyone agrees with him. And we know that this is something that Mechazad himself wanted to undo the curse of flesh for everybody. Like, he was re-mechanizing gnomes. This guy couldn't figure out that secret. He couldn't reverse engineer the curse of flesh the way the others did. Because the Mogu did it too. It wasn't just Deathwing who gave it out to the Tolvir. The Mogu figured out on their own how to undo it.
Well, I feel like I should, because honestly, this whole thing kind of has echoes of the Mogu to me, like, in feeling wise. This is why I don't think it's necessarily the old gods. I think this is kind of another display of Titan creations trying to regain whatever purpose they had lost. And in the case of the Mogu, you know, they were shapers and all of that, and then they lost their beacon, the person that guided them, their keeper, and kind of went on this whole trek, I guess we'll call it that, of flesh shaping, of shaping things. It was them still trying to do their purpose, but trying to do it without any kind of definition whatsoever. So technically speaking, they were still doing what they were created and bound to do, but it took on this really kind of dark and twisted purpose. And I'm wondering if this kind of feels a little bit like that, where you have a gnome who is aware that they used to be robotic, and he's looking at all of these flesh parts and going, this is a weakness. This isn't something that we're supposed to have. And he's just gone overboard with it, like completely overboard. And he's gone about it entirely the wrong way. Like you were saying, Mechazod, whatever Mechazod was doing, it worked. And what this guy is doing is something completely different and a lot more disturbing, honestly.
Well, what's interesting, too, to think about is the entire reason Mimiron is the way he is because Loken had him killed.
Yeah.
And when I'm not kidding around when I say had him killed. He used to look much more like another one of the big Titan Forge.
He looked like Thorim or yeah. One of the other big guys.
Maybe less physically imposing, but, they all look roughly the same. They all have similar body plans. And then he died. And then his Mechanome servants collected him and put him in a body they made for him. That body wasn't made by the Titans to house him. It was made by his servants to house him.
Mm-hmm.
It's their version.
They were trying to repair him.
Yeah. It's their version of what he made when he made them. So they have a tendency. You see this over and over again. Gnomes have a tendency to go a little off the rails and just try anything to see if it'll work. And so I'm not surprised that what he's doing is not, this isn't mechanizing. It's not converting them back to metal. It's amputation. They're chopping stuff off. They're implanting things. And that's disturbing. Your dose of body horror is certainly there, but it's also interesting because it means he does not have the thing that the old gods gave Deathwing, because Deathwing gave that to the Tolvir. That was from the old gods. The old gods, of course, they know how to get rid of the curse of flesh. The old gods made it, especially if it, flesh is our, what is it? I can't remember exactly what the old gods said, but something along the lines of Ilganoth says, flesh is his gift. You are his creation. That being flesh is their gift to the Titan Forge. It's their means of corrupting them. And they know how to take it away. If Mechagon had that from them, he wouldn't have to do this. Now, they might withhold it if, like Joe said, they just want to sow chaos, but I don't see how that helps them along their plan any. And there is stuff going on in this patch that is directly involved in the Heart of Azeroth and what's going on with trying to save it and the actual necklace we're wearing and everything. But that's all in the Nazjatar stuff. So going back to this, I don't think this is anything as simple as flesh crafting or flesh shaping. I think this is just a Mad King's dream. I think this is his, whether or not he had a magic vision sent to him or not, I think this is just him being
I don't think it was a vision, though, so much as a reminder of their original purpose. Because these little mechanomes, they were there to, what did they do with Mimiron? They repaired him. They fixed him. They made him better. As far as they were concerned, that was just part of their programming.
Well, better than dead, anyway.
Yeah. They brought him back. They fixed him. And that's kind of like what the Mechanomes were there for, was just, inventing things, fixing things, making things better. They were these weird little tinkering robot things that were there to do repairs and stuff. And
the point's been made that they didn't succeed with him.
No, but I feel
in fact, they made Mimiron worse, might be what's happening here, too.
No, you're not letting me finish, though. I think that these creations, these Titan creations, or these Keeper creations, in the case of the Mechanomes, did he find them or did he make them? I think he just made them,
He made them. He straight up built them.
So when they make these creations have, a purpose. It's like their prime directive or whatever, right? So the Mogu's purpose, they were shapers. They shaped things. And without any direction, they tried to continue on that course. And it didn't work out right. I feel like what happened with King Mechagon here is that he, for whatever reason, even though the other gnomes didn't necessarily remember what was going on, he remembered what that original purpose was, to repair, to create, and maybe he had a vision of them as mechagnomes way back when, and he's just going with that purpose. I don't know. To me, I always find storylines like this, like I found the Mogu particularly fascinating because it was kind of an example of the fact that the Titans and their creations, they aren't infallible and they can go overboard and mm-hmm. they aren't necessarily these beacons of good or whatever. Stuff can still go wrong and it doesn't have anything to do with the old gods. It's just their programming is a little wonky. And I'm wondering if that's what's up with Mechagon.
I still like think that we're going to wind up finding like some weird like master brain in the middle of Mechagon or something like that.
I mean, we might. Who knows? Who knows? We might. But I like to think of that this is just like another example of Titan innovation that maybe got entirely out of hand. You know what I mean?
Which is entirely possible.
And I interrupted you, Rossi, and I'm really sorry.
yeah, but I have no idea what I was saying. So okay. Go on, because you were talking, Joe.
I was going to say, one of the things I like about this, though, too, is ever since, like, Battle for Azeroth dropped, if you did the region where this island is sort of located, you kind of come across, like, essentially what are the Junker Wastes, where it's a giant junkyard that is just outside of a sealed wall, and it's very almost like Fallout. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very Fallout 4-ish, and I really dig that. But it's interesting because, like, there's no explanation as to what the heck is going on there. It's just in the middle of everything that's happening with all the Kul'tirans and the Zandalari and all of the war stuff, there's this little pocket of, like, unexplained weirdness. And now we're starting to, like, crack open the sort of the vault and dig deeper into the iceberg and see what's going on. And I kind of really like that because it's building off of that. It's building off of, like, why are these weird security dogs all of a sudden hunting me?
And I was going to say, aren't gnomes just kind of like little pockets of weirdness in and of themselves?
But there's no gnomes there. That's the thing. Like, you don't run into you don't run into any gnomes.
No, it's just the stuff they left behind. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, and I don't know from the Alliance side if there's anything on that, because I haven't seen it on the Alliance side, but I think it's sort of been cool that it's been unexplained up until this point.
Oh, there actually, is a quest.
There's stuff there Alliance-wise.
Go ahead, Rossi.
Well, I mean, first off, you find out that there used to be quite a few gnomes living in Borealis. Like, there was a sizable population of gnomes that had migrated to Borealis and lived there for quite a while. And they're all gone now. Like, they left. They just suddenly vanished, and no one knows why. But when you go out to Terragard, when you're in that area where the vault is, there's a gnome there who gives a quest. And he's like, look, I tracked my people to here. They came here. We have to figure out why. And he sends you in there. There's a quest to kill a big robot dog monster thing. And that quest kind of dead ends. It's just like, you know, they were here, but now they're not. And we don't know why. We don't know where they went.
It ends at that vault door where he's like trying to figure
out how to get this open.
Yeah, but he can't figure out how to get it open. It's kind of an interesting quest, too, because when it first came out, it seemed to be just a vehicle for you to gain access to a special pet that you could buy at the pet store vendor. And there's a lot of those quests out there where, like, you do a little series of quests, and then if you go visit the pet vendor, you've unlocked a pet. And this was one of those, but it still seemed to be hinting at something bigger, and this is the bigger thing that it was hinting at. So, I don't know. It's interesting that you mentioned Fallout 4, Joe, because Mechagon itself, when you go play on it, it feels a little Fallout 4, a little bit, because you have to, like, part of the gameplay there is, like, you build structures and things like that, like, you're helping this rebellion, like, build a settlement and that kind of thing, so it kind of smacks of Fallout 4 just a little bit with that.
I like that because I don't get me wrong, like I appreciate the lore of our game world so much, but I like when pop culture inspiration finds its way into shaping the lore, and that's what it feels like here. And I kind of really enjoy that aspect of it.
Regardless, that's what's up on Mechagon. the way that it plays out is a little bit different. There's story stuff that you can do, but a lot of it involves like just daily things that you can do. You get to like find stuff, turn it in for reputation. There's no like daily cap on it or anything like that. You can keep foraging as long as you want to forage. There's PvP elements involved, and obviously we've got that big mega dungeon that's coming into play as well. That's all coming in patch 8.2, and this is all stuff that you can play through on the BTR if you haven't had a chance to check it out. I think, however, at this point we should turn our attention to what is the most story-laden part of 8.2, and that would be Nas Jhatar. One of you want to talk about the history? Give us a brief rundown of the history of Nas Jhatar real quick?
Go for it.
Rossi?
Why do I have to do it? I had to do the last one. Okay, Nas Jhatar is essentially, if you remember seeing the Ashara Warbringers short, Nas Jhatar is the remains of Zen Ashari and the surrounding area of it. You are looking at the heart of the original Kalderai Empire, the big Night Elf civilization that ruled most of Kalimdor. When Ashara failed to prevent the waves from crushing it, and, you know, let's be fair here, that she didn't fail by much, but when she proved not quite capable of stopping the water from crushing the city, she made a deal with Nazoth. I couldn't know why I'm having trouble saying Nazoth. She made a deal with Nazoth that, you know, she and her people, specifically that her people would conquer the planet for him. She doesn't actually promise him anything. Like, if you go back and watch the short, Ashara makes no deal with Nazoth that involves her behavior or actions.
Nope.
She says she will, you know, she will lead her people to conquer the world for him. She doesn't say, I will serve you at any point. There is no bargain of loyalty. She even says, you know, if you don't like it, let me die. I'd rather die a queen than live a servant. So that Ashara makes that deal. He takes it for his own reasons. It's interesting that the Naga are essentially, she never even gives up control of the Naga. If you will watch the short again, she's very clear that she will lead her people to conquer the world for him. She doesn't say her people will serve him. She says she'll lead them in conquest. When she conquers the world, it'll be his world, but she's going to be the one that conquers it. That's it. She basically gives him the planet, and it's been 10,000 years, and she hasn't actually really tried to make good on that deal yet, so that's interesting. But yeah, Nas Jhatar is that area. It's the transformed, formerly underwater kingdom that Ashara has ruled since that period of time. It's where the Naga are at their strongest. It's the heart of their underwater realm, and it's where we're going to be finally. And if you play like a Blood Elf or a Nightborn or a Night Elf or a Void Elf, you are essentially going back to the fount of your people.
You thought Suramar was a trip back in time. This is like ground zero of everything.
This is the place where the Night Elves ruled supreme. This is the place where they defeated the Zandalari and drove them to their mountain. This is the place where they basically said, we rule this world, and everybody else lives here because we don't care what they do. This is the place where the height of their hubris and the totality of their power was manifest. This is the place that saw the Well of Eternity. Like when it was in its, basically, what's interesting to me is when this place comes up, you are essentially, if I don't know how to put it, you're like at the banks of the Well of Eternity. The original Well of Eternity was right on the banks of you know, the Zen Ashari was right there. It was right on the shore of it.
Yeah.
So you're walking in a very old place. This is where Ashara walked as a mortal. This is where, when she was queen of the Night Elves, you know, of all of them. And this has been a long time coming in game. We've been hearing about this place. Essentially, the realm of Ashara, the Horde Zone, that place is, roughly speaking, that would have been physically connected to this place.
Yeah.
Before the Sundering. Those two areas were once connected, to the point where there's that giant statue of, like, the head of it still there. This is really fascinating, but we don't know exactly what's been going on this whole time. Like, it's been 10,000 years underwater. the place is different now. And we're going to get to see a lot of it. There's two quests in particular that I'm really interested in. There's one for Thalissa, the Nightborn. What is she? Is she Grand Magister yet? I forget what her title is.
Yeah, I believe so.
Or is it High Arcanist? I don't remember.
She's First Arcanist is what she is.
Okay. Yeah. She's got a quest of her own where, you know, Ashara kind of barely deigns to talk to her. She's kind of like, well, you know, you were the servant of one of my servants, so yeah, whatever. And the other one's Chandra's Feathermoon. Chandra's Feathermoon has a quest as well. She gets an even less polite response from Ashara. Ashara does talk to both of them. But yeah, she was very much like, you were a peasant. You were a peasant then. You're nothing to me. And I got to say, Ashara's attitude in this is perfect. Like, note perfect. Everything I've seen of her, everything she says and does, just absolutely as arrogant as you'd expect.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderfully so. But yeah, the lore of it is essentially, this is the place where the Night Elves first, like where Xavius first contacted Sargeras. This is the place where they decided to bring the Legion through onto Azeroth for the first time. This is the place that when Malfurion decided to destroy the Well of Eternity, this is the place that Ashara almost protected. It's it makes all the other cities we've seen. Like, we've seen other ancient Night Elf cities. You mentioned Suramar. Before that, we saw Eldrathalus. We've seen ruins of various types. Darnassus itself is most likely ruins that were like raised up from the bottom of the ocean by the World Tree. We've seen cities like Quel'Thalas, which is one that they built afterwards. This is the pre-sundering capital of the Night Elves.
And I mean, the thing is, like, it's not like it's been like the other things. It's not ruins. It's not something that was freshly built after. This is something that, you know, when the wave came down, when everything like consumed this city, this place, it wasn't just abandoned. It wasn't just ruins underwater, because the Naga continue to live here. It is still their capital city of their empire. So you're going to see almost an evolution of what that architecture, what that city structure is, based off of what their needs are. So you're going to see almost like an alien version of elf architecture. And it's very interesting to take a look at and how, like, the different elements of that sort of like sea life, that sea nature, has sort of been woven into it. Even when you start looking at the Eternal Palace, you know, the place, the seat of power for Azshara, and you start looking at how that has potentially shifted from, you know, original elven architecture or even Titan influence. And it's not Ol'Gadi, at least not what I'm seeing. It's, I mean, I hate to say fishy, but for lack of a better term, it's almost like there's a sort of embracing of being the Naga, which I think is sort of interesting, because it's unrepentant. And I think that's so spot on for that type of character, right? There is no, I lament my former life. It's no, I am queen incarnate. This is my throne. To heck with it. This is what it is.
So when we end up in Nazjatar, there's two kind of different things going on. We talked about this a little bit last time, where we talked about how the Horden Alliance kind of decided to work together after rescuing Bane. What we didn't talk about was the other half of that. When these two factions arrived, they each met different representatives of factions that exist under the water there. One of them is the Ankoan, and the Ankoan they're basically kind of an offshoot of the Jinyu that left Pandaria, and they are basically deep sea warriors that live under the ocean, and they've been fighting the Naga for a very, very long time, but the Naga have been hunting them to near extinction, so we're helping them out on the Alliance side. On the Horde side, the Horde encounter the Unshackled, and these guys are a faction of former slaves to the Naga that decided to rise up and do their own thing. And there are Gil Goblins, there's Bakura, there's Sea Giants. They've all banded together basically to kind of seize their freedom, which is pretty interesting. And that's who we're working with on the Horde side of things. When you first arrive in Nazjatar, you're immediately kind of thrust into a conflict, and that's where these two factions show up and kind of pull our butts out of the fire, if that's what you want to call it, and then we establish our own base and figure out where to go from there. On the Horde side of things, though, I do want to mention this. On the Horde side of things, it's really interesting, and particularly in the introduction to Nas Jatar when you arrive. It's a little, I guess, we're talking spoilers for 8.2, so we can go ahead and talk about spoilers for, like, the Crucible of Storms raid. At the end of the Crucible of Storms, Sylvanas gets her hand on Xalatath, and kind of implies that Xalatath is going to hold some sort of important role in whatever it is she's doing next. On the Horde side, when you're getting ready to go to Nas Jatar, the introductory quests are now, they're actually on the PTR now. Nathanos Blightcaller is there, and he has Xalatath. Like, he's just carrying this knife around. When you guys arrive on Nas Jatar, you and Lorthamar and all of the, like, the Horde people, you're establishing your camp with the Unshackled and everything. Nathanos kind of wanders off by himself with the blade, because he apparently has a mission to complete. And that's all he tells you, is just he has a mission to complete. That's it. So over the course of quests in Nas Jatar, you're more focused on what's going on with the Naga and defeating the Naga and coming up with trying to dig up some kind of weapon that we can use to get access to Ashara and, like, do some kind of significant damage to her so we can ultimately bring her down, because that's what we're there for. But it turns out that things aren't quite what they seem, as always, with World of Warcraft. So over the course of doing this, and I know, Rossi, you talked about this a little bit, Chandris and Thalissra, they each have their own set of quests that you can do, where they revisit these moments in their past, and they actually revisit figures from their past, ghosts that have been left behind. That's the cool part about the ruins of Zin Ashari, is that there are spirits walking around. They're spirits of former Highborn that died, and most of them have no idea that they're dead. They act like they didn't die. They're just playing out their lives, and it's a little bit weird. Anyway, Xalatath, what do you guys think? What is Nathanos doing with Xalatath? Why is Xalatath being brought down there? What's up with that?
See, well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it doesn't have the spirit of the actual entity Xalatath within it anymore.
No.
Like, it's not Xalatath, it's just the body. He needs to find a power source for it.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
He needs to find something that will make it work. If Sylvanas wants to use that dagger to defeat the Alliance, she needs it to actually work. And if you're looking for something connected to the old gods and powerful enough to power Xalatath, a good place to look for it is in Nas Jatar, because we know that when Ashara got dragged under the water, she was shown a vision of Nazoth's palace, the completely alien, not at all Nas Jatar-like structures of the city he had created when it was the Black Empire. So there's a chance that he knows of something along those lines, something of the element, something powerful enough to make that dagger work again, something void related.
Well, I mean,
we know that Ashara was looking for the dagger,
mm-hmm.
because that's the whole quest you get that puts you on the Ash, you know, the whole quest chain to deal with Xalatath in the first place that ends up you getting the gift of Nazoth on your forehead comes from a Naga. You find orders on the Naga saying, hey, find me this knife.
Yeah.
So you know Ashara was looking for it. What did she want it for?
Well, I'm also wondering if there's something that may have existed there prior to everything going kind of haywire that maybe Sylvanas knows about. Like, maybe there's an ancient artifact or something, an item of power that Ashara always had or was always supposed to be there. And that's what she's doing. Because, I honestly think that right now the knife does no good because it's empty. It doesn't have power.
Do you think Nathanos is trying, is going to, like, wander off to Ashara's palace? Is he, like, doing a quest turn in? we got the whole missive that said Ashara was looking for this thing, and now they have the knife. So is Nathanos going to go to Ashara and say, hey, I found this thing you were looking for?
Well, I don't think it's going to be like that, but I think what's going to wind up happening is Horde or Alliance side, you're going to run into Nathanos inside of that palace.
At some point.
He's going there with a purpose.
Well, I mean, we know one thing for sure. We know this because this is something that Ashara says. This is heavy spoilers for 8.2, but we're already talking about it, so in for a penny.
Yep.
Ashara at one point tells you flat out that everything you've done with the Heart of Azeroth is N'Zoth's plan. That's exactly what he wanted you to do this whole time. He needs the fully charged Heart of Azeroth. It is central to something he requires. She doesn't say exactly what. She's just like, you thought that this was, you know, that this isn't. No, no, this is exactly what we want you to do. You've done exactly what we wanted. Thank you. So what do you think would be powerful enough to activate that dagger? And why does Ashara need it? And what does that have to do with N'Zoth's plan? Is it N'Zoth's plan to get that dagger? Or is it Ashara's plan to get that dagger? Was she trying to get the dagger away from him before he could free the spirit within it?
That's the thing that I was wondering, was you basically, when you picked up the dagger and you did everything that Zalatath wanted you to do and you got the gift of N'Zoth, you basically did what the Naga were supposed to do anyway, in theory, or at least that's how it appears. But maybe you weren't, and maybe Ashara was looking for this dagger to prevent whatever was going on.
More to do something else with it entirely.
Yeah.
We don't know. But what's really interesting to me is, well, first off, while my Death Knight certainly did turn it in, my warrior hasn't. My warrior's hands will be clean. Y'all destroyed the world. I didn't do it. But anyway, the interesting thing to me is that this idea of like what the dagger symbolizes, like what is she going to empower it with? Who's going to use it? Like who's got it? What's it for? It's almost like misdirection. Like I almost feel like we're all spending our time watching the dagger and we're spending absolutely no time finding out where did Zalatath actually go?
Oh yeah, because she's that, I mean, she, it, whatever you want to call it,
she
is out of
out
that. Yeah, she pieced
off.
Out.
But to where? Because one of the things we know about Zalatath throughout its history is it elevates people to positions of great power and allows them to achieve almost all their goals, and then it stops.
So here's an interesting question. Like, we know that Zalatath is essentially a piece of N'Zoth, right? Like, we can make that assumption.
No, we can't.
Not necessarily N'Zoth, but a piece of an old god, it was implied.
A piece of, or possibly all of, all that remains of. Much like the Heart of Ysraj was at one point all that remained of Ysraj.
Well, I mean, so if it is
Well,
another...
Here's another thing, too. Look at the weapon that Garrosh Hellscream used. What was its name? Zalato.
I was going to say, wasn't that Zalatoth instead of...
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Corrupted image of Gorfunnel. It's quite possible that Ysraj and not N'Zoth is the source of Zalatath. And again, it's a situation where when the old gods die, like when they are separated, pieces of them can live on. But we don't know. We have no idea.
And that would also explain...
called the Claw of...
Well, I was going to say, it would also explain why Zalatath referred to N'Zoth kind of poo-pooing as being the weakest of the old gods.
Well, and I guess that's sort of my question, though. Then where is the motivation for N'Zoth to release whatever's inside of it? What's the purpose then? What is, and if that's the case, like, even with going the Garrosh route, like, yeah, Zalatath or Zalato was sort of a manifestation of that power, but does it have a spirit inside of it? Is it another living creature? And I guess that's sort of the thing that's throwing me for a loop, is because whatever walked out of here is a fully actualized, it has sentience, right? It has sentience in a way that's not just a piece of
something.
It
has a body now, and it can walk and talk, and it looks like any one of us. It's not a talking piece of metal anymore.
So I guess my question is, where did that come from? Is that how old gods work when they die? Because if that's the case, how come any of the other pieces didn't do that?
Well, for all we know, they did. Zalato certainly whispers to you. Zalato talks to you. I had Zalato. I know this. The weapon talked to me the whole time. Wouldn't shut up, in fact. But here's another thing to think about. You're trying to figure out why did N'Zoth do that? What did he get out of it? Why did he free her? But he tells you why. They're quite up front with what they wanted. They wanted you. Yeah. You're the bringer. You're the torch bearer.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one. It's you.
Which is just creepy.
It's creepy because it also, but think about the other thing too. Not just that they wanted you. He marks you and gives you the choice. Do you decide you keep the mark or do you get it purged off of you? And what does that mean? What does rejecting him mean?
If you keep that mark on you, he has started to whisper to people. It's kind of unintelligible, but he has started to whisper to people, which is a little weird. For people that have chosen to keep the gift anyway. For people that didn't, yeah, you don't get Darren DePaul whispering strange and unintelligible things in your ear. Sorry. I want to go back to Ashara, though, because you did mention this, and I wanted to talk about the Ashara encounter, because it's actually, when you're in the raid, when you're in the Eternal Palace raid, right before the Ashara encounter, that's when she kind of lays things out for you, and she says, this is data mine text, it might not actually go to live, but this is what's in there right now. It says, you see the truth now, don't you, heroes? Every move you've made has been according to my will. That lumbering dwarf believed you could save Azeroth by empowering your shiny little heart, the gift of a sleeping titan. Yes, a titan's heart was exactly what was needed, not to heal the world, but to shatter the prison of a god. The ritual nears completion. The Black Empire rises, and the world awaits its true queen. That's kind of heavy, because that implies that all of this Azerite collecting that we've been doing has been a big boo-boo. We probably should not have done that thing, but we did. And I'm wondering, you know, we mentioned last time we talked about Mother in the heart of Azeroth Chamber and how she said that there was another Titan facility and that we were advised not to approach it. I'm wondering, because we did talk about this possibility about whether or not Nazca Titan, because it was imprisoning, that's where Nazca's prison was at, or at least that's where the chains are for his prison, if that was like the Titan facility that they were referring to. And I'm wondering if this is why, because we went there with our hearts of Azeroth and we enabled all of this stuff to come to pass. Not everything is in place with the Eternal Palace raid, but there is some aftermath discussion. And the aftermath discussion is a little bit sobering. Lorthmar says, our victory rings hollow as Shara's master will rise. Nothing can stop that now. And yeah, Jaina says, for all her lies, Priscilla Ashfane spoke one truth. The war between the Alliance and Horde has kept us distracted. Divided, we have no hope against Nazoth. The implication here is, regardless of whether or not we actually killed Ashara or she got away, we have set things in motion that we can't take back now.
Which, I mean, is sort of par for the course as far as our player characters are concerned. We tend to go and we don't really think of the long-term consequences of what we're doing. Just like, it always bothered me that we never asked why we were doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
You know, we just kind of did. We took Magni at his word and, you have to go collect all the Azerite. Oh, okay, Magni, we trust you. And then we go and do it. But it's
I don't think that Magni was like, I don't think that Magni was deliberately doing any of this. I think he genuinely thought that he was helping.
Sure, but then it's just such an odd thing to do, right?
Hmm.
Like, here's this blood of Azeroth, and it always struck me as weird. Why are we collecting it instead of putting it back into Azeroth? Like,
well, I feel like the implication there was that we would collect it and then at some point we would drop it off, you know? But that never happened, the drop-off part.
Right, and that's what I mean. Like, it never happens and we never question it. We just keep gathering more and 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 more. And we keep going to the open wounds and we don't seal the wounds. Like, that's the other thing. We don't seal the wounds. We just go collect the stuff that comes out of them. And then we disappear until there's more stuff to collect. And, like, I understand game mechanics, blah, 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 but it always bothered me that, like, those quests weren't about sealing the wounds. It was literally just about harvesting the blood of Azeroth. And
every other quest involving Azerite talks about how destructive it is.
Yep. So why are we not sealing the wounds? Why are we not
trying
to do
that? Why are we walking around with bombs tied around our neck?
because eventually we're probably going to explode them and release a prison. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. The aftermath, though, like I said, Lorthmar, you know, he says that Ashara's master will rise. That implies that we have set all of this in motion. N'Zoth is going to be freed and we will see the Black Empire or reinstated or something akin to it. The other thing that Lorthamar has to say, he says, we may have found common cause here in Nazjatar, but the battle still rages beyond these waters. So long as Sylvanas holds Orgrimmar, there can be no lasting peace. And Jaina says, the war needs to end, Lorthamar. You know this to be true. And Lorthamar says, I'd hoped that reason would prevail, but the time has come to finish this. I will tell my people what transpired here, of how Ashara fell because we stood together, of the threat rising from the depths, and all that is at stake if we should fail. And then I will take my place beside Saurfang and Thrall and pray that the Sindori stand with me. Lorthamar is taking a pretty decisive stand, and it's against Sylvanas. And I mean, we kind of saw this coming a little bit, obviously.
Well, they were kind of foreshadowing that too, especially, and I've talked about this a couple episodes now, when you go and arrest Bane, if you go and talk with him, Lorthamar is hitting his limit. He's hitting his point where it's like he understands he's going to have to act soon. And if you have followed him throughout the years, that's something he hasn't really done. And he's sort of been this person in the background, sort of like watching what happens because his people are in a frail place. They have been, but now he doesn't have a choice. Now it's either he takes some form of stand and he knows he has to take some form of stand, or once again, face this possibility of utter destruction. And I feel like the Blood Elves understand that a little bit better than most other races in this game. Like, they've been at that precipice of death and destruction for so long now. And he could see the writing on the wall. So what does he have to do? He has to take action. And they've been foreshadowing this since the very beginning. And I'm happy to see this actually starting to come to fruition, right? Like, his character is starting to be more involved, starting to do more what you would expect of a leader of these people to do. And it's good to see that sort of development in his character.
Yeah, we saw Lorthamar kind of come close to that line in Pandaria, but he didn't cross it, mostly because of everything that went down with the Divine Bell and everything that went down with Dalaran in particular. That kind of nixed any thought Lorthamar had of turning against the Horde at that point. But even then, he was thinking about it. So, I don't know. I like what they're doing with Lorthamar. The other thing I wanted to talk about... one last thing that I wanted to talk about here. When you're doing the quest in Nazjatar, Ashara has the Tidestone. She got the Tidestone of Golden... That happened, like, in Legion. She has the Tidestone. We yep. needed to get it away from her, and that's why we're sent after this weapon. It's to gain access to it so we can get it away from her and hopefully take her power away from her. So we go after this thing called the Javelins of Suramar, to try and gain access to it. And we get there, we do it, we're triumphant, and then an image of Ashara shows up and says, good job. And everybody's like, we're coming to end your reign. And she's like, they're like, you can't stop us. And she's like, well, why would I want to stop you? I'm going to give you a formal invitation. My palace is open. We're waiting for you here. Just come on in. That final confrontation that you have, or part of that confrontation thing that you have when you're going and finding the javelins and getting access to the Tidestone and everything else, you run into this thing called the Eye of the Corruptor. And it's this giant, you know those little squid guys that live on your head and tell you things? This is like a giant version of one of those. When you approach it, it starts whispering at you. And of course, you know, we love it when things whisper at us because we never know what those stupid whispers are going to mean. This one actually has like a pretty interesting set of whispers that says, listen, 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 listen. You were right to doubt them. The undrowned will join the chorus. Listen to it. Listen, open the gate. Step into the abyss. Complete the circle. Listen, you know this is the truth. It is but one of a thousand, you have only to listen. Everywhere you look, the stars gaze back. You know their form already, you have but to listen. Listen, she is a threat. Kill her. Kill her. The queen threatens the king. There is no way to win. Listen. So, the queen threatening the king. Are we talking about Queen Ashara maybe threatening the dominance of N'Zoth? Or are we talking about Sylvanas, the Banshee Queen?
That's a really good question, because right. It could go either way, right? Like, it could be both.
We don't see anything from Nathanos in any of the data mine stuff. beyond, he's gone to do his own mission, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, Anduin wouldn't be the first Ren to have his heart torn out by a dagger.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Rossi, why would you say that out loud?
Because it's true.
Oh, you are right, though. Oh.
Oh, man, what would even happen then?
Xalatath is a cage.
Yeah, but the question is, the cage for who?
It imprisons the spirit of a thing. The Xalatath, like, the Xalatath that walked away left that cage empty. Oh, no. Okay, so I'm... Okay. Oh, no. Okay, so when you finish the Crucible of Storms on the Horde side, you take the dagger, right? You take the dagger to Sylvanas because it just seems like a good idea. When you pick up that quest, Azoth talks to you. He says, the fall of night reveals her true face. She will bring only ruin. That's all he says. You take it to Sylvanas and... she smiles and her eyes darken, and maybe it's a trick of the light, maybe there's something really terrible going on here, but she tells you the Alliance believes that by striking down Rastakhan and decimating the Zandalari fleet, they have broken us, that the Horde will soon crumble. Fools, the Boy King has lied to himself and his people. He hasn't the faintest inkling of what he's truly up against. War is a living thing. It writhes, it grows, twisting and turning until its final form is revealed. This war is about to shift yet again, and it will be this blade that guides our way to victory. What if she's gonna, like, trap Anduin in the thing?
Well, it makes sense. It would make sense that she would try. Right? She keeps talking about striking at hope. She keeps talking about killing hope and taking hope away.
Who's more hopeful than Anduin? He's been that all his life.
And I mean, look at every cinematic we've had so far, this expansion that has involved Anduin. What is it? Light and hope. Light and hope.
I don't like the thought of any of this.
Well, I mean, we may not like the thought of it. What happens if it does happen? What happens to the Alliance?
They crumble.
No, they don't.
Well,
nope.
Okay,
We've had a Ren King get his heart ripped out before. A Ren King get assassinated before. We've now had Anduin's the last Ren King. When he dies, the kingdom will then go to no one. There's no claimant. There's no ruler. The only person who's even in a remote position to rule Stormwind would become Greymane as the last king of any human kingdom. However,
hold up.
There is the fact that Anduin Lothar had relatives. He had a son who died. He had a wife. We don't know exactly what happened to that wife. We do know that there's a possibility of Lothar having relatives alive in the world today. If they exist, they would be the last claimants to both the Stormwind and Arathi thrones, which would mean Danath Trollbane has a claim.
I'm just curious, because we did see someone else act in role as king, well, is like a regent sort of.
Yeah, the dead guy.
Mm-hmm. His daughter's still around.
Yep. But here's another thing to consider. If you're the Lich King, how do you view Anduin Ren?
The thing is,
is there any part of you that still thinks of him as the little boy that you took care of?
Yeah.
Is there any part of you that's wants to protect him? Is there any part of you that would raise him? Sylvanas killing him might be the worst possible thing from that perspective.
Oh, does he turn into a Kalia? Do they bring him back as like a Kalia Meneth? Oh. I don't like where any of this is going.
Lots of different possibilities because, as you pointed out, the dagger might be a cage for souls. The last time, however, one thing we're considering is when you're looking at people who Sylvanas seems to be mirroring the life journey of, the one that people keep forgetting is Arthas. And when she picked up the dagger, her eyes went black. For all we know, Sylvanas' spirit is in that dagger now. Because remember, when she died, she was drifting in a void of nothingness. And she saw Arthas there. And then she was brought back. Which is unusual. It's not the way other people have experienced undeath. And then she had who did she have pulling her out of death over and over again? Valkyr. And who did Valkyr work for? Helya. And the ones that the Lich King had were created by him somehow? Copying what Helya did? Did they make a deal with Helya? Is that why Sylvanas made a deal with Helya? There's a lot going on here that we don't know yet. There's a lot of what does this mean? What does it not mean? But it seems clear that Sylvanas is going to bring destruction and ruin, and it's exactly what N'Zoth is counting on.
The question is, does N'Zoth want that to happen, or does he fear it? Because we have the Void telling us, you need to kill her. You need to get rid of her. This is bad.
Is the Void saying you need to do it because it's bad, or is it saying you need to do it to open the way? Because remember, they just said, you know the truth, one of a thousand, you know what I mean? It's very much, everything Ashara says would indicate that, you know, yeah, by all means, bring the super powerful magical artifact in so we can use it. That's great. You're doing a good work, son. N'Zoth goes through all that effort to get you, not Sylvanas, you. And he puts the mark on you. And then you give the dagger, if you're Horde, to Sylvanas. There's... From the beginning, you know, what did we say about the dream that Magni has? Not the dream that he has, but the dream that Azeroth is having, that yeah. Magni's trying to speak to her. She's haunted by various, you know, images and spirits, visions, things she's nightmarishly dreaming. She's not, we keep treating her like a sapient being, but she's not even born yet. She doesn't know what's happening to her. She can't plan or think.
She doesn't sit down and have a chat with Magni. He's just sort of reading.
He's
what
doing the
she's
best
feeling.
He can to interpret. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. He's interpreting her dreams and feelings, right? Because like even when we go to Northrend with Magni, he talks about, you know, she's having a nightmare, right? Or that one chamber, the other chamber, not the heart chamber, but the other one. And it's just like she's asleep. She's having a nightmare.
He's not talking about her like a close friend or anything. It's more like a fitful child.
Yeah. And I always found that interesting as well, especially because, you know, he was a father. So he's going to look at it through that lens, right? Even if he's been reborn as a Diamond King, he's still going to look at it like a child. He's still going to look at it as, you know, not this masterful statesman, godlike being. It's a child to him. And so I think that sort of almost taints his interpretations a little bit, right? Like, at least to me, it does. It feels like he looks at it through a way that may not be the best.
Okay. As much as I hate to do so, we're running a little bit over time here. And we kind of need to wrap things up. So we're going to go ahead and do so. If you have an email for the show, we didn't get to any emails this week. I had a few. It's okay. We'll carry them over to next week. But if you have an email for the show, and you can ask about 8.2 stuff, we'll just throw a spoiler warning on there if we need to. You can send that to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just be sure to put Lorewatch in the subject line so we know it's intended for this show. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And I would like to say thank you to everybody that's been listening with us for 100 episodes. That's a lot. I didn't even think about how many years that is until you guys started talking about it. Yeah, we wouldn't be doing the show if we didn't have people listening to it, because I mean, we could talk about it amongst ourselves at any point in time. We don't have to do it for you guys, but I really enjoy having these conversations, and I really enjoy that so many people love listening to them and throwing in their input and coming up with theories of their own. Blizzard lore's fun. It's just fun. It's a fun thing to dive into. And I don't know about you guys, but I look forward to every show that we do. So yeah, here's to 100 episodes. I'm going to close this off with like one last little final thoughts thing here. Do you guys, given in light of everything that we talked about today, what do you think the next expansion is going to look like? Joe?
Oh, geez. I'm going to make a bold statement, and it could be wrong. It could be very right. I'd like to keep my track record of being right so far, but we'll see. I think that at the end of this, the next expansion is going to be figuring out how to fight the Void. And I don't think that it's... I think we're going to wrap up our old god stuff here. I think that that's going to be done here. And I think after that... I do. The way that it's going, it's moving pretty at a pretty quick clip. But I think we're going to figure that out. And I think we're going to be start looking at places like Koresh And the reason I say that is because we've seen Koresh now. We saw it last expansion. And Ethereals are around again. And now with Void Elves, there's a renewed interest there. But we haven't really talked about the Void at all this expansion unless you do the Night Elf quest or the Void Elf quests. That's going to come to a head at some point. With everything they've dropped with the comics, what they've dropped with the stories, the books, and everything that's happening there, I think that's where we're going to start turning our attention. Whether or not Azeroth is in One Piece or safe or whatever is going to be a whole other story, but I think the key is going to be, how do we stem the tide of the Void? Okay. I think that's going to be it.
Rossi, what do you think? Same question.
The gnomes kill us all. No, I got nothing. I'm sorry. I don't. I have nothing.
Okay.
I don't even have a... If you want me to just make something up right on the spot, no, I got nothing. Sorry. I just honestly, this expansion has left me completely incapable of figuring out where it's going.
In a way, that's kind of a good thing, because I see like three or four different ways that it could go. And Joe, you were talking about like going to Koresh and going to the other worlds and fighting the Void. Yeah, I could see that. I could also see Lich King Part 2, only Sylvanas stepping into that role, which would be interesting and weird. I could also see Rise of the Black Empire very easily, with us going to Nyalotha, maybe even, because that would be fun and terrible and great.
Oh my god, you just made me think of something.
What's that?
We keep thinking that Azeroth waking up would be a good thing. What if we don't get a Fel Titan? Or a dead Titan, or a Void Titan. What if we just get the most powerful Titan who's ever existed?
Oh.
With absolutely nobody to stop it. There's no pantheon. There's no pantheon to raise it or tell it what to do. What if in the end Rathion is the winner, and the final Titan is recreated, and that's what we have to deal with?
Oh yeah, if we didn't even talk about Rathion, That's also an interesting possibility, because what do we do if we make the planet better?
Yes, what if it does heal? What if it does grow? What if it does come forth?
Okay.
And do we end up riding around the cosmos on the surface of Azeroth as it defeats every evil? I mean, what happens? I don't know.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for now. Thanks again, as always, you guys, for listening. And we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.